You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions
Weekly Trek,
episode 33.
Welcome everybody to Weekly Trek. I am Shashank Avaru, co-host of Polytrex, and I'm often here on Weekly Trek. Also, this show is your roundup of everything Star Trek that happened this week. Transportation of major updates, replication of new merch, Section 31 caliber fan speculation, whether you were stuck trying to figure out where Mon's money went, and whether it's actually gold or gold plus platinum, or you were stuck trying to transport from one nebula to another, just trying to find coffee, we are here to catch you up this week, just to get you in tune with all the Trek news you missed out on. Joining me today is Wes Huntington from the Minnesota Star Trek podcast. Did I get that right?
The Minnesota Star Trek Nerd Podcast.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry I missed out on the nerd. Wes, thank you so much for joining me. I'm excited for you to get in on this and give us your thoughts. For our listeners who are interested in knowing what we'll be discussing today, we will have merch news. There are some Trek prints that are out. We'll talk about those. Is Megan Fox joining the Trekverse? She finally weighs in. There is an in-depth interview with William Shatner that we'll talk about, and how the new CBS CCO is all gaga over Star Trek. And we finally have a release date for the Picard series. And for those of you not in the know, Brightest Star dropped earlier this week. And the writers give us a lot of analysis and spoiler-heavy thoughts on the short. And we also have a new updated episode count for Season 2 of Discovery, which is pretty exciting. And before we get out of here, it was a wonderful month for me, the comic book nerd of the group. So we have reviews of Trek vs. Transformers and Terra Incognita, both that dropped this Wednesday. So, Wes, we will get into all that, but we have to start with some heartbreaking news. John D.F. Black, Star Trek screenwriter, associate producer, very well known for writing the Naked Time episode, has passed away at 85. He passed away earlier this week. What do you think of the Naked Time, Wes? Is that an episode you're a fan of? Were you aware of this? How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of this episode. Yeah, it was sad to know that he did pass away. Yeah, but I guess from what I understand, he passed away the week before, and only his widow had announced it this week that he had passed away. It is really sad to know about that. But he also wrote a couple episodes of Next Generation as well, The Naked Now, and Justice.
Yeah, that's a great connection. I'm glad to hear that you're a fan of the episode. It's definitely one of the better episodes of the original series. And one thing I've noticed recently with another comic book artist named Steve Ditko passing away, he also had passed away a little bit earlier than the date we found out about it on. And it seems like these celebrities from that era have, some of them have this tendency to not lead a very public life after a while. It was an interesting connection that I found between some of those celebrities from that time. And we're all sad. We are definitely going to miss such wonderful writing talent. And it's nice to know that his legacy lives on. This time, it actually lives on in a plethora of ways, and one of those are Star Trek prints. Looks like we're going to get some new Star Trek prints just in time for the holidays. We are reporting this from StarTrek.com. They have released 7 new Star Trek art prints, and these include new posters from The Next Generation, Original Series, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, and there are also some character and starship posters, just beautiful posters. Just looking at them, they're 18 by 24 size. I definitely like them a lot. Wes, what did you think of these? Do you have a favorite?
I'm looking through it right now, Shashank, and I actually I this is actually pretty cool. I actually, out of the seven, I actually like the TNG one the most, because it's got everyone that was like either a recurring character or on the crew of the Enterprise was a cast member. You got Tasha Yar right in smack dab in the middle there. It's pretty cool. And unfortunately, you got Wesley in that god awful sweater from season one. But
I didn't say it. You did.
Yep, I know. I think it's god awful. God awful sweater. But I do like it. I think out of these seven, I actually like the TNG one the most.
Yeah, they're definitely very good looking. They're the color's also desaturated from some of the faces, which adds to an interesting, almost black and white, old timey look that they were going for. They remind me in some ways of, and I wonder if it's the same artist. I don't know if you've been to STLV yet, but they have these rows of posters that are across the gallery of shows. I remember in 2017, which was the 30th anniversary, they had one print for every episode of TNG. They kind of remind me of those. If I had to pick a favorite, mine would be the Bird of Prey poster, which is a bird of prey flying with the bright sun in the background. It just looks beautiful. That's my favorite. Is there any one of these that you're considering buying? Maybe you'll pick one of these up.
I would. I'm not sure about picking them up just yet, but I probably would at least probably one of these. And it was the HMS Bounty, by the way, from Star Trek IV. So that actually is really cool. It's the little the sunrise over Vulcan too. So that's actually pretty cool. I'm looking at it right now. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, good to know you liked it. That's all the merch news we have this week. Not a whole lot of things announced. I'm guessing everybody is busy already stocking up their Christmas gifts with all the Trek stuff in the world. But speaking of just some stocking stuffer, this is an update that I would have really liked had it turned out well. A little while ago, there was a video that went around that was shot from an audience section looking into a panel with Megan Fox and John Cho, and this caused rumors that this was probably a connection that was waiting to happen, and that Megan Fox had joined the Star Trek universe, and this was one of her soon-to-be-released discussions about what it's like to be in the Trek universe. Just a whole lot of news, and this escalated when the Star Trek social media accounts started spreading this little video around, and they even had a little tag for Star Trek itself. We are reporting this from foxnews.com. Although if memory serves me correctly, I was one of those people who was like, yes, she's going to be in the next Star Trek movie. But spoiler alert, it looks like at this point, she actually has no idea what people are talking about. While I try to mend my broken heart, what do you think of this news, Wes?
You know, I remember this rumor that she was going to be joining the fourth movie under the direction of S.J. Clarkson. And I know that they're looking for a female villain. That's what I read somewhere about a couple months ago. And she would definitely be the great addition to the universe, obviously. And she would draw a lot of box office. Definitely. You got to think of the business aspect of the thing. And finding out that she doesn't know what people are talking about, it's a little disappointing, but it's not like, you know, she's not opposed to it. That's actually a good thing. I totally would love to see her in the next Star Trek movie, either be in as the villain as they want in the movie or something else. I would totally see the movie regardless, but I think with she being in the movie, she'd draw a huge amount of box office.
Yeah, my one concern is that if it's going to be in the JJ verse, the Kelvin verse, everybody remembers the infamous scene, which felt so forced and contrived. Yep. The one in which Alice Eve's character, Carol Marcus, in Into Darkness, is she's changing uniforms in the ship, and it's you see it and you go, oh, really? Do we need that in a Star Trek movie when we're trying to say so much against stuff like that? That is just objectification of female characters. I hope if she does become a villain or a supporting character of some kind, that is avoided, because famously in the Transformers movies, that happened a lot. It just does not fit in the Trek world. So I hope they avoid going down that route with her.
I hope they don't do that either, Shashank. I hope they don't do it either. Even though, yeah, it was technically, and I know, what was his name? Damon Lindelof, who co-wrote In the Darkness, said that scene probably should not have been, you know, in the movie, but they decided to anyway. So,
well, that's an interesting piece of information. I did not know that. Well, while we speculate on whether Megan Fox is going to join the universe, we actually have an in-depth interview from Parade of one of the greats of Star Trek. It looks like William Shatner is on the promo rounds again. This time he's promoting his country album called Why Not Me and the Live Long Yarn memoir. A lot of questions here across different subjects. Looks like one of the things he's talked about is that album, and he's also talking about his latest project, which is a Christmas album called Shatner Claus, which I believe is also on the promo round that he's going around. So he talks about that. He talks about Star Trek and why Star Trek is still resonant. He talks about some of his movie roles. I have an interesting thought about one of the end questions that are out there. But what did you think of this interview, Wes?
I actually watched a little bit of one of his music videos, actually, to speak about his Christmas album. And unfortunately, I couldn't get through it. It's nothing personal against Mr. Shatner or anything like that. He's just, he had a bunch of kids sitting around and he's trying to sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And it just wasn't that great. And it's nothing personal against his music or anything like that. It's just, I just couldn't get through it. It was just I got a little cringy. I didn't know that there's actually plans to revive his TV show that he had done called Rescue 911. I did not know there was plans to revive it. That's new to me. I actually watched Rescue 911 when it was on. It was a good show.
Nice. Is it a different role for Shatner? I have not seen that show. Is it interesting?
It is interesting. It's about, like, you know, like how did the, it's pretty much talking about EMTs and stuff like that. How they responded to these certain crises that happen in people's lives.
Interesting. We'll get back into the Trek of it all in this interview. The interviewer asks, why do you think Star Trek still resonates so strongly with people? And I'm quoting Shatner's answer. Star Trek is science fiction, and science fiction to a large group of people is part of the awe and wonder of the universe. We speculate what's out there. And since we have no way of knowing, anyone's speculation is valid as anybody else's. Science fiction speculates an answer, and I think that is the fascination. It's good to know that he's still embracing that side of his career. He's famously not a fan of the other non-Shatner Treks, so it's nice to know he's still banging a drum. And that was a sweet answer, if you ask me. But he was also asked another question about CBS All Access has the new Star Trek Discovery series. Have you been watching? And he answers, no, I have not. Nor have I watched any other stuff than my own. And very rarely that. I think that's kind of something that we always knew, that he's not really a huge fan of wanting to sit down and watch all the Star Trek. I'm sure there are a lot of reasons that he has for doing that. But what did you think of these two questions? Does it give you some hope about maybe we actually do get that digitally de-aged cameo in Discovery at some point?
Actually, I remember watching one time, I think it was called the Captain Summit that was made for the Blu-rays of the first six films. And it was moderated by Whoopi Goldberg, and Shatner was there along with Leonard Nimoy and Jonathan Frakes and Patrick Stewart, And he told Patrick Stewart, I had never seen a full episode of his series. And I don't blame him. I really don't blame Shatner for not watching the other Star Treks because he's obviously not in it. I mean, granted, his character's referenced many times.
Speaking of the Star Trek Discovery, David Nevins, the new CCO who has taken over the Les Moonves role, is now out doing the rounds for year-end interviews, and he was recently at a conference hosted by UBS, and this is from Hollywood Reporter. He talks about some State of the Union stuff for CBS in general and where the network is and where Showtime is. He really gets into some of the track of it all, but what did you think of this interview and the subjects that were covered? Did anything stand out to you?
Obviously, the CBS All Access stuff did, because, you know, that's where Discovery resides, is in CBS All Access. Granted, I've watched a little bit of stuff on CBS proper and stuff like that. I don't watch Showtime stuff. But apparently, according to this, it was the scene that generated the most excitement was CBS All Access, which is a good thing. I mean, granted, it's not as old as, say, Hulu or Netflix, but definitely if it's driving some excitement about CBS All Access, I'm all great. That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. He does talk in detail a little bit about the Star Trek and where things are going with All Access. I'm quoting him now. He says, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 is in a great place, and there is huge anticipation for Picard that will premiere at the end of the year. I think it was at this conference that he revealed another news item that we'll discuss a little later about the premiere of the new Picard show. But it's good to know that Star Trek Discovery Season 2 is in a great place, because I felt like Season 1 had a mountain of opposition to climb up, and it did it so well. And it's nice to know that now they have a positive view going in, and hopefully that's a lot of good news for the future of the show. He says that in spite of the drop in broadcast networks, CBS has had one of the best falls of any network. That's kind of interesting. I don't know if that's really fact or just hyperbole, but overall, good news, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree too. And, you know, I'm actually looking forward to one of the things he talked about was the Twilight Zone reboot on CBS All Access, which will launch next year from Jordan Peele. And I'm a huge fan of the original series of Twilight Zone. And I'm curious to know what he's going to be doing with it. That's the one thing I'm actually looking forward to that's not Star Trek related on All Access, because... like I said, I'm just a big fan of Twilight Zone, and I hope they can get... This would be kind of cool, and I hope you are on board with this idea. I hope they get the Discovery actors to guest star in the Twilight Zone as, like, different characters, obviously. But it'd be kind of cool to, like, tie in with All Access materials. That'd be kind of like a cross promotion kind of thing, because remember in the original series, many of the Star Trek actors like George Takei, Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner, I think James Doohan did it once too. They all guest starred on the Twilight Zone before they even were on Star Trek. So I think it'd be kind of like a reverse Star Trek kind of like plant in the Twilight Zone.
That sounds like a great idea. The only thing I would take over that deal is if they will remake Nightmare at 20,000 Feet with Chris Pine as the protagonist.
That'd be awesome.
There are so many reasons why I really want to watch that, especially after listening to you and the possible addition of current Star Trek actors. That would be definitely fun, interesting, and just so much will go into it. And I'm sure it'll cause some issues with Shatner. I'm sure he won't be happy about it, but it would just be nice. That would be a good way to give tribute to the original episode. But hey, speaking of that, Picard series release date. Let's talk about it. We also have a detailed article from Trekcore.com, and they're talking about what the current... all we know is it's still the Picard series, and that he, from this statement, it looks like it's going to be out at the end of the year 2019. So there will be something on the schedule there. And it looks like the actual production will kick off next spring. And just that's all kinds of exciting, lots to unpack. I have a little bit of a theory on where things are going and how it relates to Discovery. But what do you think of this release date? Is it too soon? Is it perfect? Is it a little late?
I think it's perfect because obviously Discovery Season 2 is going to run from January to April, and then they're going to be subscriptions are going to go down. Obviously, it happens. But I'm kind of curious to know what the title is of the Picard series. Granted, I think it would be called Star Trek Picard, but that'd be interesting, not going to lie. I would rather much like to know the name of it. And I guess Trekcore had the document, but it had to redact a lot of things, like even the name of it, because obviously they want to reveal it themselves. It was on their Twitter account, like the day after this article was published. I think it's perfect, Sir Sean, because it starts production in, I believe, April, which is technically when Season 2 will end of Discovery airing on All Access. I think if they start in April, they can get like the first half of the season done, and then you can start releasing them at the end of the year. That'd be kind of great. I think it would probably be, in my opinion, if it be like in either November or December of next year, which would be great because it'd be my 30th birthday. December, definitely. So that'd be a great birthday present for my 30th birthday. So what are your theory about? You want to talk about your theory, Shashank?
Right. So those are great thoughts. And if I could just add, here he says that we will have at the end of 2019 that Picard series start. Now, we don't know if it's a multi-season series or a limited series, but let's just assume that whatever that season one is will go from January to April, typically for the same like a 12, 13 episode size series. That's probably where it go, maybe March, maybe April. And then you have from April 2020 to December 2020. And I think that is where there'll be an interesting clash, because I'm sure given that season two of Discovery will do well, there will be a season three of Discovery. Now, will that drop from that April to the end of the year, like they kind of did with season one? Or this is my theory, is that as soon as that show ends, given that that show might be a bit of a downer, the Picard show, there's a good chance that's when they will drop Lower Decks, and we'll get Lower Decks from that fall, that summer fall window will be covered in there. And then bang, right into 2021, we'll have Short Treks again that'll fill us up till 2021. And I think that's when we'll get season three of Discovery. Am I making sense at all?
Yeah, you make pretty good sense, because eventually I know they want to have Star Trek going on every single week on All Access, regardless of what it is. Either it's Discovery, Picard. I've heard it's going to be multiple seasons somewhere. They're planning for multiple seasons. But granted, Patrick Stewart is, he's 78. He could probably still do this, like do episodic television, just not the grueling schedule that he had when he did The Next Generation, obviously. But they eventually want Star Trek all the time on All Access, which is good because it keeps the subscription levels high. It keeps making the money. CBS, definitely. I think I know that with all these announced series like Lower Decks, the Picard series, Discovery, and the rumored Michelle Yeoh Section 31 series, I know that they're trying to throw money at Star Trek to make sure it appeals to every fan. Because right now, I think that the demographic right now is between the ages of 18 and 49, and generally are male, and maybe if I'm female. But I would rather have a Star Trek that's not for me. And I'm just saying this right now. I want a diversified fan base that, like, the Lower Decks would appeal to, like, you know, people who want to have a little humor, poke a little fun at Star Trek, you know? And then you got the Picard series, which is going to be super serious, super dramatic, you know? And I think that would be something that, you know, I'd be interested in. Same with Discovery. I love Discovery. So that'd be great. And then you got, like, other rumored series that they're planning to do, like the Section 31 one with Michelle Yeoh. Maybe like the Starfleet Academy series that they want to do.
I hear you. And that's okay. I think that's the future of the franchise is, people who, you know, will, unlike us who had other shows that were our first Star Trek shows, I'm sure for a lot of people, Star Trek Discovery is their first Star Trek show, and that's their fandom, and that's how they get to define it, and that's great. But speaking of some of the fandom stuff and franchise and future, it looks like another really big money move, as the big wigs call it, was making the Short Treks, because it seems like it's finally coming to fruition. I really enjoyed the first two Short Treks, but I just have not had the time to see The Brightest Star yet. However, from sci-fi.com, there is a short writer interview, and the two writers are Bo-Yeon Kim and Erica Lippold, and they both sat down and gave some answers, revealed some spoiler thoughts. So before we get into the actual interview, Wes, did you get an opportunity to see The Brightest Star?
Yes, I did, and there was, I know... It happened. This was something that happened. I just want to mention it right now. CBS was having some issues dropping The Brightest Star. It was supposed to be dropped at 8:30 Central Standard Time, like our time. It ended up being closer to 9 o'clock before it actually dropped on All Access. I know that I had a lot of fans complaining, either on Facebook or Twitter, going like, if you it's gonna lower the boom now, what's gonna happen in January when the season two starts? I mean, granted, I understand their concerns, but I just want to say this right now: CBS probably they understand that they made a mistake and they have profusely apologized because it wasn't released on time. But the people who run All Access, the people who drop these things, are probably human beings who just honestly made a mistake. They're not infallible. I mean, granted, sometimes I think fans put All Access on the same pedestal as Hulu and Netflix, and when things don't go a certain way, they get upset. And I understand. We just got to be patient, and that's the patience that we learned. Very, very well with The Brightest Star. I got a chance to see it. I only got a chance to see it once so far.
Can you give me a short non-spoiler review?
Yeah, I can. It takes place on Kaminar, Saru's home planet. And it's pretty much it answers the question, how does Saru become the first Kelpian to join Starfleet? That's pretty much what I got. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Right. Since it actually dropped this week, we'll give our listeners a little bit more time before we get into the actual spoilers. And this particular interview does have spoilers. But one thing which I'm sure a lot of us figured is that we know, of course, this takes place before Discovery happens. But one of the answers was that it's about, and this is a minor spoiler, so if you don't want to listen to the rest of this conversation, maybe skip 2 or 3 minutes ahead, but spoiler, it looks like this takes place about 18 years before Discovery begins. And that means that this is taking place somewhere in the 2020s to 2030s. My question to you, Wes, is do you think we'll get another chapter of the Kaminar continuation or is or something in Saru's past, because Saru is such a breakout character and it seems that this is getting such good reviews. If they do short treks in the future, do you think we'll get another Saru short?
Doug Jones did say at New York Comic Con that they will be returning to Kaminar in season 2 of Discovery, and I've heard that if you it will tie into this short trek. They will be coming back to Kaminar. For the first, that's a good name for the planet, by the way, Kaminar. I really thought it was going to be named Kelpia. but we get short treks in the future. I think we will get prequels to, like, other characters, not just Saru. I think we will get a Gorka one. I really think we will. Like, the one... prior to being Captain of Discovery, how did the whole thing with the Baran happened? That would be something I would watch. So I think definitely this could be... I think we could get more prequels. Prequel of other characters. Either Tilly, Michael, any of the other characters. I would totally watch them.
Great. That's good to know. And it actually leads... Very nicely into our final news item, with you bringing up, you know, the connection to Kaminar. Our final news item for today is that at Christmas with the Captains, Anson Mount revealed that season 2 has actually been extended by one episode. And it'll actually be 14 episodes instead of the previously announced 13. So that's just more Discovery, which is great. You'll never hear a complaint from me about that. Do you think this might be because they are taking a... no pun intended, trek to Kaminar or another place that'll add some more story, enrich the plot? Or why do you think this final decision that did not happen in the beginning was made? And is it just because there are so many characters that it's kind of difficult to balance at this point?
This was met with a lot of enthusiasm, first of all. 13, you know, I mean, granted, yeah, we had 13, it was going to be 13 for season 1, and then they extended to 15. I like this. This is a great idea. So now we'll one extra week. Remember, there's going to be no break between when it starts and when it ends. No mid-season break at all. Maybe they'll do it now, but because it was an even number, 7 and 7. I don't know about the Kaminar thing, maybe the reason why, but the Christmas with the Captains thing was actually at the Star Trek set tour in Ticonderoga, New York. So he was there along with William Shatner. So Anson Mount was. And yeah, that's actually kind of cool. I'm happy that we're getting our extra episode. And I'm kind of curious to know how they're going to do 14 instead of 13 or 15.
Yeah, and that's definitely, that curiosity is, I think, where we all are at. But hey, Wes, thank you so much for joining me on this weekly trek. For our listeners, they know usually there is a few seconds of a break and then you'll have the reviews as promised for both the newly released Star Trek comic books, Terra Incognita and Trek vs. Transformers. Of course, there will be a spoiler and a non-spoiler review, so you can listen to whichever one you want. But while I do that solo here in a few seconds, Wes, where can people find you?
Well, I do the Minnesota Star Trek Nerd Podcast. It's twice a week, Mondays and Fridays. I release them at midnight Central Standard Time, just to make sure that everyone gets a chance to listen to it, obviously. You can find the Facebook page as facebook.com/MNStarTrekNerdPod. And the Twitter handle is MINNSTNerdPod. So, I talk about everything Star Trek. Coming up, I have a holiday themed episode. And then the week after that, I have, Women of Star Trek panel, pretty much, with four women, two from the UK and two from the United States, and we're going to be talking about all the female characters in Star Trek, ranging anywhere from Uhura all the way to Sylvia Tilly. So I'm looking forward to it, definitely.
Wes, that sounds wonderful, and it was a pleasure having you on the show, my friend.
Yeah, definitely. I love to come back sometime.
Absolutely. You know, I'll be inviting you to come record with me at 11 p.m. on Saturday night.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's it for the news section of this week's Weekly Trek. Hang on, and we have got those comic reviews coming. Hey, listeners, thanks for sticking around. Before we get out of here, as promised, here are the reviews for Star Trek Terra Incognita, 5 of 6. So there is one more issue left there. And then Trekformers, or Star Trek versus Transformers, 3 of 4. So there is one more issue left there. It's a rare treat for me getting to review two single titles in one episode. This does not happen that often because they usually do not drop in the same week. But since they did, here we go. For the next minute or so, I'll try to give you the non-spoiler versions of both these reviews in case you haven't read these books. And I'll let you get out of here and you can stay spoiler-free and go and actually enjoy the comic. But if you stick around, there'll be a little bit of a break for a few seconds, and then I will jump into the spoilers. So no spoilers yet. When I actually begin talking about them, I will warn you guys, so that way you know we're going to get into spoilers. But here we go. In short, Terra Incognita 5 of 6. This was a bit of a misfire for me. I am not going to lie. If you've been following the series, you know, each issue is focused on a particular character. This is kind of split into two, but it's very much a Dr. Crusher story. Unfortunately, that was part of the problem. But in short, the synopsis is, as part of the continuing conflict between the different alien short stories that we've been getting and the larger part of the story, which is Mirror Universe characters invading and in a way secretly taking over or trying to take over the Enterprise by masquerading as their current characters. When I say that, I mean as their Prime Universe counterparts. There is that going on also. So this is a pretty standard episode-like story in which the Enterprise finds out that these people called the Lolligans have had they're under a serious medical threat. Their people are getting infected and dying, some of them, and they become rabid and they're trying to kill, and they become zombies. They are their version of zombies. And Crusher and Worf go down to investigate along with Barclay, and adventures ensue. It was a bit of a misfire, like I said. I continue to have my small problems with Hernandez's art. For the most part, it's great, but every time he pulls back and he shows us these characters from afar, one of the joys of reading a comic is that you still get to enjoy the detail in most comics. But here it seems like he's continuing to do that thing where if he's going backward, the characters almost turn into like stick figures in a weird way. It seems to be a stylistic choice at this point. In the previous issue, I thought when I saw it, this was more or less, you know, some kind of a mistake that would be corrected, but it looks like that's definitely a choice that he's going with. It just does not work for me, but that's a minor complaint. The art overall is great. They've done their best with the story that was given to them possible, but a bit of a misfire for me. If I was to rate it, I would give it a Warp 5.5. Not quite there yet, but my engine's still running, so I'll keep going since there is only one issue left. So, bit of a misfire for me, but they did the best that with what they had. I don't blame the artist. It's definitely a wrong choice of story, in my opinion, for the writers. But the Tiptons, hey, they give and they take away, you know. So that was my, I said 1 minute, but I know we got into it a little bit longer. That was my in short review, non-spoiler, of Terra Incognita 5. And luckily, I actually have some good news. Unlike the minor reservations I had in the previous issue of Trekformers, this one's a blast. This one really gave me that Star Trek versus Transformers action I was looking for. So for those of you who are following the issue or would like to know where the story is, it's split into two. It's kind of a B story and an A story in which some of the Autobots are stuck down under a mine with a part of the crew on a planet, while above, the ragtag group of remaining crew and the Autobots are trying to fight off these Decepticons that have teamed up with Klingons to try to destroy them once and for all. So a pretty standard story. I can't discuss anything without getting into the actual spoiler. So it's just a continuation of where those guys were. They were in the mine and these guys are up fighting, and that's the continuation. But this was a wonderful issue for me. And something happens, and if you stick around in the spoilers, you will get to listen to what happened. Something happens in the last two pages of this book, which was already great, and I was enjoying the heck out of it for what it was. Something happened that gave me goosebumps when I saw it happen. As a fan of these two franchises since I was a child, it was a beautiful marriage of for the two of them, and I never thought I would see it in my life, and I didn't even know I wanted it, but for that one two-page scene alone, I highly recommend buying this issue. When you pick it up and you read it, you'll know what's going on. This is great writing. Unlike the last issue where there was a bunch of exposition, this is straight up action. It's just Autobots fighting Decepticons and our wonderful officers fighting Klingons. It's great. And all the hijinks that you can expect with action happen, which is also wonderful. This is a strong Warp 8 for me. Maybe on a second or third reading, I might go to Warp 9. I don't know. But pick it up. Seriously, pick it up. You will not regret picking this issue up. Even if you haven't been following the series, if you just pick this one issue up, for the sheer joy of what happens on the last two pages, you will want to pick it up. Trust me. So there is my non-spoiler review for both Terra Incognita and Trekformers 3. So from here on, I will be discussing spoilers. So if you do not want to get into them, you can follow this show on at Weekly Trek on Twitter. I believe we're the same on Facebook. We are proud members of the Tricorder Transmissions. Feel free to follow the Tricorder Show account on Twitter. That's Tricorder Show, at Tricorder Show. If you really enjoy what we're doing here and you would like to give us some Ractogeno and fuel to keep us going, please consider donating to our Patreon at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. At just a dollar, you can have access to unedited episodes, all kinds of crazy Patreon exclusives, like Barry and I recorded an episode called Puppy Treks for Polytrex Patreons, who again fall under the larger Tricorder Patreons, in which we talk about our dogs for an entire hour. It's great. I highly recommend getting on that Patreon and helping us out if you feel to. But thanks again for joining me. You can follow me on at @gutter_hero. That's GUTTER_HERO. It's mainly a fan/writer/podcaster account. And I do get into other franchises, and I talk about all kinds of stuff, personal stuff, like my adventures with my dog and other franchises. But Trek is a big part of it. So if you feel free to follow, if you would like to follow me, feel free to do so. If you do not want to listen to the spoilers, thank you for joining me. Until next time, I have been Shushank Avaru. Again, thanks to our guest host, Wes, from Star Trek Minnesota Nerd Podcast. Live long and prosper. Hey, you're still here. Okay, let's get into the spoilers. I'll start with the Terra Incognita story and what my issues were with that. Like I said, that was a bit of a misfire because for better or for worse, it's a Dr. Crusher story. Now, I have often said on this podcast in my review section that the Tiptons always like to do too much dialogue. For my taste, every word bubble of theirs is, you know, at least 30 to 35 words long most times. And very rarely do we get just show and not telling everything. They enjoy doing their showing and telling together. That has worked out great in some situations. There are some stories like Mirror Broken where I enjoyed all that. And then there is like this one where in every issue there seem to be at least 5 to 10 word bubbles that I can see that can be cut out and the story would not lose a whole lot. And it would make the reading experience a whole lot better. But the bigger problem this time around is that, like I said, it's a Dr. Crusher story. Now, if you remember anything about Dr. Crusher and the stories that were centered around her in TNG, you'll know that they're not usually very cinematic. Maybe cinematic is not the right word. They're not very visually. They're not very visually telling. They're not stories that are made for you to sit and enjoy and go on a ride with. They are usually philosophical. They have a lot of exposition, and a lot of time it's just people sitting around trying to figure out what to do. And this story, so they find out that this plague that is happening is actually unknown, and it looks like the Lolligans don't actually have a history of any kind of disease like that. So Picard sends them off in two teams. He sends off Worf to go down and evacuate the planet, and he asks Crusher to find a cure along with Bartley and Data. That's where the story gets kind of it kind of gets middle of the road for me. So when you get to see both of them and what's going on there, there is a bit of a conflict between Crusher and Worf when they approach the Lolligan Council, and they tell them, we don't know what's going on, but we'll try to do our best. And then the Lolligans give them access to all their history and their medical information, and Crusher now needs Barclay and Data to help her with the research. But Worf says, you know, there is no time. These people are turning into zombies fast, and we need to find a way to get them out. This is not going to work because we have literally no time to sit down and philosophize and figure out what is going on while these Lolligan people die. And she says, no, I'll figure it out. I'm confident. I need these people. And ultimately, because of seniority, she says, I'm sorry, Worf, you have to go and evacuate on your own. And he says, okay, I'll get another team down. I'll leave you guys here. And he begrudgingly accepts authority and leaves. And from this point on, we're probably maybe 9 or 10 pages into the story. And from here on out, there is little to no action in the story. And when I say action, there is no actual action happening. It's people sitting in a room the whole time. The remainder of the story is just Dr. Crusher and the team figuring out what is going on. Why is this happening? Why are these people dealing with this disease? And then they contact the Lolligan people, and then they say, oh, there was a time when we are natural water creatures, and then we moved to land, but we didn't like land because our evolution took us to land, we still missed water so much, we wanted to go back and live in water. So we conducted a genetic evolution. We kind of messed with our genes to keep going and living in water. Eventually, after much more talking and big dialogue bubbles, the three of them figure out, oh, this is happening because they rejected their programming and they went back to water, and the water is killing them. So they find out the silicon cure, and they use it on a few test patients, and it works out. And that ultimately tags in with Worf's story. Yeah, all of this happens by people just sitting and talking to each other. And while that works great on some of the episodes, there are some episodes, like usually you'd like to have some kind of action, there is very little action in this issue. And it's just all of them sitting and talking about this. You know how I just told you everything that happened? Imagine that, but with a lot more dialogue bubbles and a lot more information and just people sitting and talking. It's just the entire issue seems to me at least, Crusher and Bartley and Data are sitting and talking. Now, something happens at the end of this issue that makes it a little more exciting. But if the exciting thing in your comic book is, or the most exciting thing in your comic book, or that's 24 pages, is the last 2-3 pages, when the rest of the story is just people sitting and talking, that's not a good comic book for me. So Dr. Crusher's stories do not have a lot of visual scope. There isn't people going around shooting. If you take the previous Crusher story, that has a lot of visual action. You see a planet, and you see buildings falling within themselves, and you see all kinds of cool aliens, and you see people trying to jump off blocks, and you see a literal arrow forming in the air. There are some images that you remember. This book, for the most part, just has people sitting and talking in the room. And that was just, and while that might have been essential to the story of Dr. Crusher trying to figure out how to cure a disease, it does not add well, or it does not lend itself to making a good comic book. Now, at the end of the book, you find out that Barclay, who we know as Mirror Barclay all along, spoilers for previous issues if you don't, I'm sorry, but Barclay is confronted by Data, once they go back to the Enterprise, and it's revealed that that data is not our data. So that's an interesting thing. I don't remember seeing when that shift happened between data and data, but I'm excited to see where that goes. And he says something to the effect of, Barclay, you have deserted our captain. He does not like that, and neither do I, and that's where the issue ends. So that's kind of exciting, I guess, but a bit of a misfire for me. But my day instantly brightened up because I had my issue of Trek versus Transformers sitting there ready to be read. And as soon as I finished reading this, I picked that one up. And it goes back to that joy of issue one that I had, in which, you know, I actually never thought I would see the Enterprise surrounded by Autobots fighting off Decepticons and Klingons. And that's exactly what this issue is. They go into some more of the information placed within the story. Like, you try to see how Kirk and the Autobots down there are trying to get back the Enterprise back up in from the mine, and this is a really well-told story. And while the action's happening up there, Optimus Prime gets critically injured, and the Autobots that are left have no choice but to accept that there are so many Decepticons that have surrounded them, and Spock and Dr. McCoy and Scotty, who are down there, they're with Optimus, and they're trying to figure out a way to get out of this while the Decepticons, I'm sorry, come around and surround them, and they say, hey, you need to give up, you know, you're wasting time, this is your loss, you're going to lose this. And then we cut to the mine, and we see what is going on, and the Autobot there, Ratchet, helps Kirk meld his mind in a way. He helps connect the ship's synapses to Kirk's mind, and now Kirk can control the Enterprise with his mind. It's kind of like in X-Men's Cerebra, how Cerebra helps with a head device look at and talk to all the mutants in the world. They kind of set up that kind of framework, and it made sense that a Transformer who's programming allows them to emote and animate. That's important, emote and animate, remember that. It allows Kirk to have a connection with the ship that can fly in itself. So on the top, while Optimus and the team realize they've been outgunned, Spock surrenders. He goes up and surrenders to the Klingons and Decepticons and says, we're ready to surrender. It makes no logical sense to not do that. Just promise that all the civilians will be okay. And while they're talking this out, from the ground, you see the ground explode and the ship come out, revealing the Enterprise and all the other Autobots are left. And now you see cool action between, you get to see Sulu drive Windblade, just all kinds of interesting scenes. And now they're evening the battlefield. And while they're shooting at the Decepticons, who have now realized they have to start retreating, and they're all coming in, and the fight is back to an even level now. This is the goosebump scene. Ratchet, who's with who's inside the Enterprise with Kirk, who's now connected to the Enterprise with that mind control or that mind fusion link, tells him, hey, it's time to do that trick we practiced. And then it cuts to Kirk. And the second to the last page, it shows in these really small panels parts of the Enterprise opening up. They're bending backward, they're moving sideways. And if anybody who's a Transformers fan knows what that means. And you see these parts moving away, and then that's when you get one of the best things I've ever seen in a Star Trek comic. You get to see the Enterprise transform into a Transformer. And I don't want to describe it. I don't want to describe how the Transformers look. It's called Fortress Tiberius, which is incredible. Fortress Tiberius. Tiberius is, of course, Kirk's middle name. And I don't want to describe it because I want people to go out and pick up this issue. But that last page is where you see Enterprise turned into a Transformer, standing up and saying, the team now needs the power of Fortress Tiberius. So if that's that, just those words gave you goosebumps, you're on the same wavelength that I am, and you need to go pick up this issue. Mike Johnson is a crazy genius. I have long believed that he is the best Trek comic book writer to have taken up the reins of the franchise. This just cements it for me. And if Fortress Tiberius didn't do it, I don't know what will for you. But seriously, go pick up this issue. Anyway, those are our non-spoiler and spoiler reviews. Hope you enjoyed the show. You heard the boilerplate. Just make sure to keep listening if you can. And always give us a shout out. Share this with your friends. Tell them to listen. Tell us what you think. We always love feedback. Until next time, I will talk to you guys hopefully with more comics, with more updates, news. Discovery Season 2 is around the corner, so I'm sure that'll be a lot of news. But hey, until next time, live long and prosper.